Welcome to another episode of FMI's Built-In Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Winstead, FMI Consulting President. I'm really excited to share my conversation with Stina Chandler with you today. Stina is an FMI partner and the leader of our leadership and organizational development practice here at FMI. She helped shape the firm's framework and approach for talent strategy, the same model many of our clients use today to drive their business strategy. Before joining FMI, Stina helped scale a venture-backed solar company from one small office into multi-country operations, giving her firsthand experience with the chaos and opportunity that comes with rapid growth. Today, she's a trusted partner to CEOs and CHROs across the built environment, known for turning complexity into clarity. Please enjoy my conversation with Stina Chandler. Well, Stina, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, I'd love to go ahead and jump right in. You know, you've talked about talent strategy as intertwined with enterprise risk management. I'm curious, what do you mean by that?
So every executive knows what's inside their strategic plan. There's something likely related to revenue growth, to growth in new markets, to growth in geographies. And there's a lot of consideration usually for what capital needs to be invested to move those growth initiatives forward. And the people side of things often becomes an afterthought. So the idea here would be that strategy certainly comes first, as it should, but rather than the people components being more putting a name in a box under a geography, you're asking yourself, is this person truly ready? So I'm going to get to your enterprise risk question here in just a second. And I have an example to share, actually, of a client that I'm working with right now who put a very bright project executive into a position to run a $1 billion job. And they were probably one rep or two too early, and as a result, made a couple of critical decisions that caused millions in rework and then strained the relationship that was years long with this client. So I think that's the point I'm trying to make around enterprise risk, is that weak pipelines will make good people into unintentional liabilities. And so what I'll often talk to clients about is, it's like you're driving a race car on bald tires. It looks pretty, it's fast, it's going to make those turns quickly, but at some point your tire is going to blow out. And so how do we get ahead of that? And I'm consistently reminded of our research a couple of years ago in the talent study, which was that I think they said 93-95% of executives struggle to retain and attract great talent. And more than half of them believe that has significant and severe implications on their profitability. So when you talk about the talent as it relates to enterprise risk, I don't know how you get closer than that sort of impact on your P&L. So when we talk about talent strategy as a way to mitigate that risk, I'm suggesting we get more ahead of that. And rather than saying, we'll just recruit for that role, or we'll just initiate a training to solve that problem, because that really, that's more of band-aids on a systemic issue, right? We need to get ahead of that. And I think, I'm not saying anything that a lot of executives wouldn't already know. They know the work that needs to be done in many cases. The challenge is it will take time and it's really hard work, but like Jerry Seinfeld says, the hard way is the right way.
Where I thought you might be going in terms of enterprise risk management and strategy and kind of putting people in roles maybe a little bit too quickly who are high performers in their existing roles, I was thinking about the philosophy that structure follows strategy. You kind of take just a thought experiment and you say, you know, if you had executives list their top 10 or 20, depending on the size of the firm, most talented humans that they have on the payroll today, and the top 10 or 20 most critical roles they have inside the company, and then kind of doing a comparison to see, you know, how many humans on the first list are occupying roles on the second list. And if there's not a pretty clean overlap, then there's a problem there. So I may be jumping ahead a little bit in the discussion, but when you started to talk, and that's where my brain automatically went in terms of structure and strategy. A lot of the times the two are not necessarily as aligned as one may think.
Right on. And that's exactly what we'll get to, is how to bridge the two. And that's really the CEO's responsibility to create that bridge from the business strategy to the talent outcomes, to the talent philosophy, to the way that you execute it. And the other piece that I'll get into a little bit is where and how to focus on those pivotal roles, because I think what you're talking about are the roles in the business that have an outsized impact on profit, on revenue, on reputation, right? And how do we make sure we're placing the right amount of emphasis on those pivotal roles versus what I've heard a colleague call the peanut butter strategy, where we're just spreading it all equally across the organization.
Yeah, the whole chunky peanut butter versus smooth peanut butter, right?
Right on.
So we kind of jumped right in. So maybe if I could back up for a half a step and just get you to articulate or define what you mean by talent strategy and maybe how that's different than traditional HR or leadership programs.
What I would say at a high level is most firms confuse strategy with activity. So there's a lot of organizations out there, and we're seeing this trend in our industry. They're hiring CHROs, they're hiring directors of talent, they're hiring internal training teams to run these trainings, and they're thinking about all the different things that they have going on. They've got trainings, development activities, performance systems, HRIS systems, et cetera. The challenge is that without sort of a clear through line and direction, the risk is that those just become activities with a variety of degrees of momentum. So the idea would be talent strategy is a direct bridge from your business strategy. And I'm going to get into the components a little bit later too, but the first component of that is talent outcomes. And I mentioned too that we're hiring a lot of HR professionals in our industry, which is wonderful. The risk, though, is that some CEOs and executives think, oh, well, I did my part. The people part of it is done. And you can't outsource the soul of your company. So the way to think about it from a mindset perspective is you've onboarded a couple of great co-pilots, but CEOs and executives really need to be at the forefront, especially as it relates to talent outcomes and talent philosophy that I'll get into a little bit later. And maybe just two quick examples. Our team was with Russ Becker, who's the CEO of API Group, an $8 billion publicly traded organization. He said, I spend at least 20% of my time on talent. So imagine what that looks like, right? This organization on an accelerated growth path. And that's the difference between organizations that grow and organizations that stall out. I've got another CEO that I work with, and he talks about his talent strategy like a talent factory. And it makes other executives and the people working around him bristle a little bit. Hey, we're not cogs in a machine. Don't talk about us like a factory. But that's not really what he means. He's talking about building a deliberately engineered system with predictive outputs. So imagine you've created a leadership structure within your organization with clarity of expectation at every single level. You can basically map that to your strategic plan and see how many leaders do you need at each level, when do you need them, factor in your attrition rate, your promotion rate, and in a sense, make a formula on the people side of the business for how to grow.
So I'm curious, Dina, in that scenario you just described from ideation to where they are today, I'm curious what's been the schedule? Like how long has it taken to go from like brainstorm to, hey, let's really get serious and intentional about creating this factory and this pipeline?
Start to finish, this will be years in the making, right? But I think, and that tends to be prohibitive for some to think, oh, I just can't, where do I even start? And so my encouragement would be, don't think of this as a 3-day retreat that you're gonna talk about this subject in 3 to 6 months. There are drumbeats that you can start integrating now into the business. So for example, talent philosophy, your talent philosophy, and I'll get into this a little bit more, but your talent philosophy already exists. You already make talent decisions and you already have a talent philosophy. It's more of a matter of how do you surface that? How do you integrate that into conversations? And how do you make sure your leaders are using that to accelerate their decision speed? So when I think about this one organization, started working with them a little over a year ago, and they had some components and pieces in place. And right now we're on component 4 of 4 of really the talent strategy sequence. And one of the things that they're finding as they integrate this into their performance and development cycles is that things are actually getting simpler. They're streamlined, they're more cost effective, they're more cohesive, and they all have that through line that goes back up towards talent philosophy and talent outcomes. So I think the timing really depends, but at the end of the day, we're talking about behavior change, and that is small, consistent touch points over time, and you can start that tomorrow.
You know, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but a mentor of mine years ago that talked about this business, just like any other business, the best performing firms tend to think of the business as a going concern. We're going to be here tomorrow. We're going to be here a year from now. We're going to be here 10 years from now. And they decide, they make decisions accordingly, and they allocate capital, resources, talent, et cetera, accordingly. So said another way, in our industry, that's a very project-based business. It's easy to kind of run the business project to project. We've got a project. We've got to hire these three people. We don't have the project. We don't need these people. You know, that if you really kind of strip away like what separates the best from the rest, it's a different philosophy. We're going to invest regardless of market cycle, and you can kind of see that in the results. But to your point, it's not a 3-day retreat. It is a through line.
Exactly. One way from a mindset standpoint to think about this is think about leadership like you think about your financials. You would never accept a $1 billion job or forego it without deeply understanding your balance sheet and your cash position. You shouldn't do the same without a deep understanding of your leadership position either. And when you can put a lot of these pieces in place, you can start to ask questions of your leadership pipeline just like you do of your financials. Where are the risks? Where are the opportunities? Where are we over-leveraged? Where are we under-leveraged?
Just continuing on that vein, I'm curious, what are the essential components of a true talent strategy?
There's a lot of subcomponents, but if I were to narrow it so folks listening could take action on this, I'd say number one is talent outcomes, number two is talent philosophy. Number three is leadership pipeline and defining that. Number four is performance and development. So I'll talk a little bit about each of these. So back to step one, which is your business strategy, right? If you don't know where you're going, then start there. Where are you expanding to? Where will you play? How will you win? All these questions. So assuming you have a strategy in place or a strategic plan at the very least, going 1, 2, 3, 4 years out, the next question would be to ask how many of these goals or parts of this plan live or die based on talent. If we're going to expand to a new geography, again, we need capital and talent. So really be thinking about which of these demand that we take a double take on talent. And then what folks tend to do as they think about talent and their business plan is they say things like, you know what, we're gonna focus on retention or we're going to develop great leaders. And these are great. They're aspirational. They're wonderful messaging, but they don't mean anything in terms of outcomes. So a bit of a from to be thinking on from focus on retention to we want to retain 90% of our foreman and above field leaders through clear expectation setting and career pathing, right? That's an outcome. Or we want to move from focus on development to we want to promote all PXs within 3 years of being in that position, and we want them to be successful 2 years after they have been in that position, right? So ways of measuring. And here's what that does for a CEO or a CHRO is it allows them to do two things. It's they can challenge and say, how are we closing the gap? I don't see us closing the gap this much. What are the things that we're putting in place to close this gap? Right? It becomes a lot more actionable. And then the other piece is just play a more supportive role. What obstacles do you need moved out of the way in order to accelerate this? What can I unlock to move this in the organization? So I would say talent outcomes first are critical. CEO's hands are, they're on the blueprint, they're on the wheel on that one for sure. And then the second is talent philosophy. And this is one where, to some, it sounds a little airy fairy, right? Oh, philosophy, great. What does that mean? And what does that actually do? And I would say this is the most critical piece of the talent strategy because of the impact that it has on accelerated decision making. One example, I was working with an organization who was deciding about the succession of their next COO for a couple of years and entertained the idea of looking for this position externally. And after 2 years said, you know what, that's just not us. We don't look for that high level talent externally. We believe in building from within. Now that's great, but that plane should have been landed 2 years ago. And you can imagine all the dollars and time and investment spent in a couple of years of roundabouts to making this decision. So talent philosophy, to be clear, it already exists in your organization. You've already used it to make tough decisions. Oftentimes it's just not defined and it's just not surfaced. So I want to give a couple of examples here. One would be, and they're usually we believe statements, right? We believe leadership is our greatest differentiator. We believe in building leaders internally and only bringing in external leaders if we need new capabilities. Or we believe that fairness means transparency, not equity. We believe in setting clear expectations, but not providing the same opportunities for everybody. We believe talent is an enterprise resource, and we're going to move talent around the country even when it's uncomfortable. So you can start to see how that will guide a lot of your decision making. And it's the North Star, so to speak, on how you bring people into the organization, how you keep them, how you develop them. And for those who are, you know, haven't necessarily landed on their talent philosophy, I would encourage you to think about four spectrums. So one is the build versus buy, promote from within. Or do you believe in bringing in new, fresh perspective at different points within the organization because of the value it provides, right? Where do you lean? The second would be differentiate versus equalize. We've touched on that one quite a bit. Do you invest in pivotal roles, or do you apply that peanut butter methodology to everybody? Do you, and then the other one would be manager judgment versus process consistency. Do you want to decentralize decisions down to the managers? Or do you like to centralize things for consistency, quality, and sort of oversight sake? And the fourth would be, this one seems small, but we've seen this crop up over and over, would be the internal mobility versus client stability. Are you going to move people around the country? Or are you going to keep them with the clients that they're at from a client stability standpoint? So in terms of starting, if folks are thinking, I have no idea where to start, think about those four spectrums, think about those couple of statements I made, and then think about how have we made the tough decisions? What calculus came into play? So the third component is really the leadership pipeline. And this is the component that's based off of the leadership pipeline, the body of research that has been around for a couple decades and is really the gold standard around succession and around leadership progression. The idea is, this isn't about looking at every single role and title that you have in your organization. It's about determining what roles and titles fit within each of these leadership levels. So let me give you an example. What the research would say is that there's, depending on the organization, 6 to 7 leadership levels: leader of self, leader of others, leader of teams, leaders of functions, leaders of business units, and so on. And many different roles fit within each of those leadership levels. And what distinguishes them is a passage between each level. And what happens a lot in organization, and we've heard people refer to it as the Peter principle, right? Promoted to your own level of incompetence. What most likely happens is that people skip a couple of passages in their promotion. And then we question, why does the senior leader still have first line habits, right? Why hasn't he developed in his ability to think holistically, to think strategically about the business or whatever it is? So the idea here is really codifying those leadership levels, where your existing roles fit within those leadership levels, and then defining what progression looks like. So you can imagine at each level, you know what success looks like and what the indicators are to move to the next level. The last thing I'll say on this is, for one of my clients, this was a big unlock, because what they realized were the only way they had to ascend in the organization was through leadership. And the challenge is that they had a lot of great technical leaders who then got promoted into people leader roles and were not successful. So it had them thinking deeply about a dual track, right? How do we make sure our technical experts stay as great contributors to the organization and advisors to some of our most important clients, projects, operations, what have you, but they're not in the leadership track. And the difference that's made for the CEO is he can look down throughout the organization in his leadership track and know he has the right people in the right place. And he can see succession and readiness at every level throughout the organization. So that's the piece around the leadership pipeline and really defining that for what it looks like for your company and where the roles fit in. And then the fourth is performance and development. And these are all the activities I mentioned before. Every company has these activities. So what I would say is the exercise here, when you get to step four, is to ask the question of all these activities. Does this align with our talent philosophy? Does this drive forward our talent outcomes? Is this commensurate with the leadership pipeline that we set forward? Is this, in some ways, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? Are we investing in the right places? More often than not, and we'll get to this point with talent strategy, organizations simplify. They cut down and they focus in the right places. The last piece I'll encourage here is that performance and development have to be tied together. They're not separate. Every performance conversation has to end with what is the next step? What is the next growth opportunity?
So, Steen, I'd love to go a little bit deeper. You mentioned the Peter Principle and the parallel between technical competencies and leadership competencies. I'm curious why the former seems to be so easy for organizations and the latter seems to be so elusive or so challenging.
It's a great question. I think at a high level, technical ladders build capability and leadership ladders or pipeline, they build confidence and continuity. And you ask why it's so hard. Well, I think number one, leadership often isn't visible until it fails. Whereas technical outputs, it's deliverables, it's milestones, it's tangible, it's often pen on paper, right? You can see the results pretty immediately. Team performance is dragging, erosion of trust, you're starting to lose one or two people, begins to point to leadership, but it's often such a lagging indicator that it becomes hard to notice quickly. So that might be one reason just why it's hard. The other piece would be defining a leadership pipeline. Again, the reason why this is so critical is it creates clarity for your organization, clarity for your leaders, and speed of decision making. All of your managers know what is expected of leaders at every single level. They know what to look for as it relates to performing at each level and how to move to the next. People can look ahead at their career path. When you look at the Gallup poll that's done across, it's industry agnostic, but done across the workforce, usually it's something related to achievement and recognition are the top two. So by helping leaders define what they can do going forward, how to achieve in their existing role and how to move to the next one is a critical piece for retention. And then what I would say is a leadership pipeline is where profit meets culture. So what do you see in terms of lack of leadership? You probably start to see some turnover. You probably start to see some fee erosion. You probably start to see some loss in productivity. What do you see with great leadership? You see talent retention. You see people going above and beyond, and you see people making the right choices. And where does that turn up? Directly in your bottom line.
So I heard this the other day, and I'm not sure where I heard it, but it was treat the soft stuff as the hard stuff and measure what matters. And so I'm curious, as you think about all this and executives and where they sit and wanting proof, hey, is all this working? Is all this investment, that we're pouring into talent and talent pipeline and talent strategy? How do you measure ROI kind of in the cleanest and the clearest sense?
Yes, the multi-million dollar question. And part of this comes back to, well, number one, I would say treat your leadership position like your financials, which I mentioned before. Ask the same questions, seek the same understanding. So there's probably two pieces of this. One, you need visibility into all these pieces of your pipeline to truly measure it and understand it. Now, when I think about organizations that have done this well or are trying to do this well, from an ROI perspective, here's what they're measuring. One would be revenue per liter. So in theory, or revenue per FTE, whatever the measurement is, per head. And you could imagine separating this into leadership level as well if you wanted to drill down. But in theory, as you invest in your leadership, you should see a return in productivity. So that should be very real over time. That is one thing you should absolutely measure. That answers the question for you over time. Is the juice worth the squeeze in terms of all these development efforts that I'm putting in? The second would be margin stability. So I think one concern I'll see from executives is, well, shoot, we're taking people out of the job and out of their day-to-day work. We may see decisions falter on projects, or we may, lose some headway as it relates to profitability. That should not be the case. So when you really begin to invest deeply, you should see margin stability and then a margin gap increase, right? You should see your margins increase. There should be less fee erosion. There should be more, leader-to-leader productivity. I've even had some leaders test this a bit when they have different divisions or different business units apply different thinking as it relates to talent. And I've seen some pretty remarkable results to the tune of 20 to 30% increase in revenue above and beyond the other business unit who is not applying the same talent strategy, right? Talent methodology. The third would be internal fill rate. So I'm going to assume that every CEO or leader wants to fill open positions with their internal team, assuming that they're ready, right? Assuming that they're capable. So measuring your internal fill rate is critical, but what you'd also want to measure on the back half of that is success 1 to 2 years within the role to ensure that they're not getting promoted too early. So it's a little bit of a two-step process. So internal fill rate, and then looking at success within the role 2 years later. And we know from research too that, especially in the higher level positions, 50% of leaders fail when they move into higher level executive positions. So, in terms of raising the bar here, it's set pretty low right now. Can you use this to raise that up? And then the last would be retention of top talent. Yes, it's a lagging indicator, but it's a critical one because every person, every top talent person on your team, it's not just refilling that role. It's refilling the productivity in that role. It's refilling the general knowledge in that role. That's likely millions of dollars in that is millions of dollars in future value per person at higher level roles. So really thinking about retention as well.
It's a great explanation of how to measure. I'm curious if you kind of go a little bit farther and just talk about, in your view, having worked with lots and lots of CEOs across the landscape, what does it look like when a CEO truly acts as the chief talent strategist?
It's a great question. Step one might be listening to Rob Fallow's podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think you can see that he's a natural chief talent strategist because it's not an afterthought or a sideshow, it's integrated. So from separated to embedded and integrated. So one, and I use that quote around Russ Becker spending over 20% of his time. And folks say, well, I don't have an additional 20% of time. How could I do that? My job requires 150% of me already. And so it's about changing what you're already doing. So one, I would say, what can you integrate in your natural business rhythm? Can you In existing meetings, can you talk about, do we have leaders and teams to deliver this? What are the questions and the drumbeats that you're consistently asking as it relates to likely two things, talent outcomes and talent philosophy? So that's one, integrating that into just general business rhythm. This is the way that we operate, even when we are having discussions related to our financials or board discussions, right? There's no place where talent and the people in this company don't belong in terms of discussion. So, how do you, as CEO, lead the way in that front? The second would be know your bench personally. Leadership transitions fail all the time. At one point, there was statistics around 70% of companies fail when they transition the leader from the top. And what will help prevent that is knowing your bench personally, the options, their development plan as well, right? You're leading by example because you want your executives to do the same. Another body of research that we did a few years ago suggested that it takes CEOs 7 to 10 years to effectively transition their business. So even when I'll talk to new CEOs, I'll say it's never too early to start getting to know your bench and thinking through this. So get to know your bench. The third would be a little bit integrated into the business rhythm, but model and message and coach. If you want your leaders to live this out, you live this out with your executives. Ask them how they're coaching their leaders, how they're living out the talent outcomes. Hold them accountable to talent outcomes, just like you hold them accountable to their P&Ls. So those are some of the changes that you can make like in stride that could make a huge difference just by simply setting direction and changing the tone of the conversation.
Just to build on something you said there, and I probably won't get it exactly right, but you referenced the conversation we had the pleasure of doing with Rob Fallow a couple of weeks ago or a month or so ago about talent strategy goes from being a sidecar to an embedded part of the business strategy. I always come back to the concept of ownership and alignment. So how do you go from having the CEO own it to having the entire leadership team own it?
Yeah, exactly. The ownership piece probably lies in different hands as you move throughout the talent strategy. So the CEO should really own the talent outcomes. They don't pass off the business strategy for someone to do and then put in their lap, right? They're an integral part of driving that forward. It takes a team effort for sure, but the accountability rests with the CEO. And that's the same for the talent outcomes, as well as developing the talent philosophy, which again already exists, but usually needs some help being elevated into awareness. So, when we will do a lot of talent strategy work, or we're side by side in organizations, or just simply advising, the work of this is small, consistent touch points over time, and it is bringing in people early before decisions are made or things are finalized. So, we'll often talk about authorship is ownership. You commit to what you co-create. And so, when you think about talent strategy, the question becomes, where can I get other hands on this to co-create them with me? And one organization that I'm working with integrated this into all of their existing XCOM touch points. They would raise a couple of updates and then they would raise a key challenge for folks to collaborate forward. When we can see our fingerprints on things, we're much more likely to move them forward, right? So it's about creating consistent touch points for people to commit to the product and help co-create the product. And it's hard work. It's just a lot of hard work. If there were an easy button for this, everyone would have done it. But I think even just starting from the top, if the CEO thinks about how do I consistently beat this drum, you're going to start to see your executives parrot or mirror back to you a lot of the things you've been saying. You're going to start to see them do the same things in their meetings as well. So that's the only thing I would say there is don't go in a back room for a weekend and produce a talent strategy document and push it out to the organization. Co-create it and lead by example.
You've mentioned that in a number of our previous discussions, Dina, this whole philosophy of, authorship equals ownership, and you commit to what you co-create, which I think is so profound and seldom utilized for a lot of organizations. And especially with new leaders, you see a lot of times where they get the nod and they think, oh my gosh, gee whiz, I have to have all the answers. So I'm going to do what you said. I'm going to go in the back room. I'm going to spend a weekend. I'm going to come up with this. I'm just going to come reveal it to the organization or to the leadership team. And I think it's understandable, the philosophy, but that mindset shift ends up being a great unlock for a lot of folks.
Does. And especially when you think about a big undertaking like talent strategy, you've already done this with your business and your business strategy. So most folks have the skill sets to be able to do this and see this through. And to be thinking about it as a mountain you climb, this is a trail you lay out one stone at a time. So it will take time, but how do you just bring people alongside you to kind of lay that trail?
Love that. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I have one final question. So, for a CEO who feels stretched already, what's one or two high leverage ways that they can start owning the talent agenda tomorrow?
I would look at a couple things. One would be When is the next opportunity that you're going to celebrate a big business win? Whether you're going to an opening of something, whether it's an all hands, whether it's an XCOM or XCO meeting, and to ensure that you're spending equal time celebrating the people aspect and what has led to the strategy. So people will pick up on cues like that. Where do you spend your time and energy? And that would be the challenge, is look at your schedule next week. Don't change anything, but see how can I integrate more of the emphasis on people and ask people related questions about how we drive our strategy. So that would be one piece. The other would be define a single talent outcome, just one. So if you want to expand into a new sector, a new market, a new client, new geography, whatever it is, what is one talent outcome? You might say, I need three critical roles filled by next year with one ready now successor behind each role. You don't need to do the work right now, just define it. So define one talent outcome, look at your schedule next week, make some notes on how to integrate talent into your existing discussions. And then the third would be just thinking through where and how do you interact with your people team? Where and how do you interact with your CHRO, your director of talent, your employee experience teams? Because most likely, if there's tension or frustration there, which there often is CEOs think, boy, I wish they could do more and drive more through the organization. And our people folks think, boy, I wish our CEOs would be more involved in setting direction. There's likely some next steps there on how can you create more of a co-pilot relationship rather than engaging deeply when it comes to bonus or performance season. Now, that's not for everybody, but you can imagine just rethinking that relationship might help move things forward.
Well, it's a great place to end the conversation, Stina. Just what's one or two things that executives could do next week without blowing up their entire calendar? Thanks so much for a great conversation. As always, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and please come back.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of FMI's Built In. As Stina made clear, talent strategy is the ultimate test of leadership. It's how CEOs turn ambition into capability and strategy into results. If this conversation sparked ideas for your own organization, please like or subscribe to the podcast for more insights from leaders shaping the future of the built environment. Until next time, remember your talent strategy isn't just a people initiative, it's a business imperative.